Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. We've got another great show for you all today. We're diving into all things yoga and posture and artificial intelligence with the founder and CEO of Breathe Happy, Shitti. Thank you so much for joining us, Shitti. How are you?
Pleasure is mine, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time. We got connected through the Bethnal Green Ventures portfolio. How's that experience been for you with the folks over at BGV?
They're just gold. They were one of the first and earliest investors in Breathe Happy. They're just a bunch of nice people, and the magic of working with nice people is amazing. They're always rooting for you. The support doesn't end 3 months after the program. The support is continuous. We have regular check-ins. In fact, just an hour ago, I had an intro from one of the investors there. So there you go.
That's great. And yeah, well, we're excited to have you on and to be connected through that network. And also, you've got some other great sort of sterling social proof. Like I saw Deutsche Bank and, you know, a few other pieces on there. So congratulations on all that early success.
Thanks, Paul. We've been fortunate that way. I think this also speaks a lot about the tech for good space, because a lot of traction, support, endorsements that we've got has been through tech for good space. So Ween Social Tech is another social tech enterprise that works for tech for good. Companies like ourselves, MedCity endorsement came on the back of being in health tech. And by virtue of being in health tech, one supposes one is doing tech for good. We were part of the SimDH cohort as well, similarly for digital health. So another endorsement there. So yeah, I think the genesis and kernel of this all was to use technology for good. And I'm glad the ecosystem is maturing for that.
Yeah, it's really nice. I was thinking about that the other day. It's like really nice to work or to live in an era where you can like work for things you're passionate about that are helping the world improve, but also, you know, make a living and, you know, do well. So that's, we'll get to that later, but that's like one of the key things we talk about in tech for good. So that's great. Well, let's start with you and your founder journey. We'd love to just hear how you came to start Breathe Happy. The name itself just kind of breathes, you know, goodness, obviously. And yeah, what problems and challenges were you looking to solve when you started it?
In terms of my career, I started in India, an electronics engineer and MBA myself. And my career took me around the world. So got into the world of consumer marketing, worked across PepsiCo, Wall Street Journal, Britannia, moved to the US, worked in Chicago there with Pepsi, then moved to Europe, worked across France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal. And about 4 years ago, came to UK and made my home here. Somewhere along that journey, about 2 years ago, my grandma had a prolonged suffering with that started simply as obesity and type 2 diabetes, but then deteriorated into dementia and many other forms of neurodegenerative disorders. I believe that if exercise was a pill, it would be the most prescribed one. However, people who need this pill the most often can't access it. So in those two last years, it became difficult for her to exercise at all. And it just hit me. It's not like I didn't know of this before, but it just hit me because I was close to her, because I witnessed it in close quarters, that how much of our healthcare systems focus towards urgent care, towards fixing people, towards sickness, rather than helping people not get sick. So it was with that mission of putting care before healthcare that Breathe Happy was born with. My own personal experiences sort of then started gelling, and I started twiddling my thumbs as to how I, as an engineer, as a marketer, contribute towards that. It was a big leap of faith for me to even think that something as abstruse, as difficult, as complex, as regulated as healthcare could even be dented by an outsider like myself. And I tried it. I started jotting down where the overlaps could be. Where could I help? Now, I had my own personal practice of yoga for the last 20 years, across these movements, across these shifts. That was one practice that kept me sane, working out of hotel rooms and whatnot. And this thing about accessibility and personalization was close to me. And to be able to solve that became the priority number one. So getting the focus of healthcare system towards preventative healthcare, getting the focus towards early diagnostics by democratizing the solutions, in bringing the access at home, number one, and number two, personalizing this to your body and your needs. That's how we came up with the idea of Breathe Happy.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, that speaks to me on a number of levels. One, like, you know, grew up in the States and you don't need to talk to me about a healthcare system that is just pushing pills on people and not preventive. So that's, yes, I'm on board. Two, I mean, I have an elderly parent who struggles with diabetes and, you know, we think early stage dementia. So I definitely like feel and honor what, you know, you went through, it sounds like, with your grandmother. So appreciate that and just love hearing founder stories where it's born out of, you know, a challenge or even trauma in some cases, you know, so that's really powerful. And then the last thing is just a personal thing where I was in my yoga class on Monday and I was like, I can't quite do this stretch and I need a little bit more, you know, personalized support. So when I saw Breathe Happy, I was like, all right, how do I get on board? How do I, you know, so, but yeah, maybe like talk us through that. Like, so how would a user engage with your product? How would they start with Breathe Happy and getting that AI support, things like that?
So we started off, funnily enough, and this is where the startup stories sort of folklore comes alive. We started just as a WhatsApp group. We started just as a tool for people to come and drop in on online classes. And bear in mind, this was pre-COVID, right? So online yoga class itself, as normal as it may sound now, was a bit of, what? Yoga? Skype? How's that going to work? Right. Nobody does Skype yoga anymore. That's a different story. On that side note, if ever you're feeling down with your career or your job, you should think about the product manager of Skype, because they were like the pioneers of this field before Zoom and Teams and stuff took over. But anyway, story for another day. So yeah, so we started with that attempt of just connecting with authentic teachers from the foothills of Himalayas, Rishikesh, the yoga capital of the world. And we got on board 30 top teachers, and we call them master trainers because there's the trainers of the trainers. A lot of the teachers that they've trained and coached have actually come to the UK and US and set up their own studios. We're still fortunate to have them on our roster of teachers. And then suddenly pandemic happened, of course. My startup journey coincided with once in a lifetime event. And we were just, again, twiddling our thumbs on how do we do better? How do we scale better? How do we serve the community better? The WhatsApp group was growing. The people who were using our product were growing. But also we realized that now with about 300 million people coming online for their yoga practice and much more, there's just that much bigger room for us to innovate in. One of the key gaps that we started learning was for the need of personalized posture correction. And this was just what I needed. I was already sold on the idea of personalization. I was already sold on the idea of at-home fitness. That's where I anyway wanted to make inroads. And that's how we started thinking about machine learning. Now, both Radhika and I, with co-founders, were also from engineering backgrounds. So we knew basics of getting everything together, but now we needed a specialist in convolutional neural networks. That's where Universe provides. We met Simon. He's a top engineer from Cambridge University, machine learning expert himself, but an internationally certified yoga teacher himself. So that's in fact how we met, and just a gifted and amazing individual as well. So there we go. We just spoke first as a matter of a few conversations, and then it just took off. His vision and our vision were completely aligned, both from an ethics perspective on what this practice meant, what healthcare meant, and where we were going. So to cut a long story short, what our products are able to do, we have two products in our fold. One is called Practice, the other is called Yorkshire. With Praxis, you can practice outside of live classes. With Yorkshire, you can practice in the live classes. They're essentially these two formats of practicing at home. Outside of live classes, if you think, how do you practice? Well, 80% of the population practices on YouTube. So you go on praxis-ai.letsbreathehappy.com. You get a place box holder where you insert any YouTube link. If you don't have the YouTube link, you can search, say, Yoga for Arm. you'll get 9 list of videos. There'll be a little box called Train With Me. You click on that. On left-hand side, the video that you just searched and YouTubed will come up. And on the right-hand side, your own image in real time practicing will come up with posture overlays. And just like that, that passive content becomes active and personalized for you. This happens to our technology where we map 37 joints in your body and give you posture feedback in real time. This technology can also be packaged for real-time classes for trainers, and that's what the next product called Yoksha is about. It's basically Zoom or Google Meet for fitness. So it gives custom interfaces both for teachers and trainers. So the students, even in a group class, are able to see teacher one-on-one and not get distracted by other interfaces, others, dogs, cats, sounds. Whereas the teacher can see the posture overlays on 20, 30, 40 people, which they otherwise are not able to give personal attention to. Not to mention the features like voice activation, because you're standing 5 feet away. You don't want to keep coming back to your laptop to mute, unmute and stuff like that. So, yeah, we're quite excited about where we are in our journey. I think in terms of technology and the products, we've made a real dent in user experience. So everything to love about it.
So many questions. I mean, first one, what is the lag time between like getting that feedback with the Praxis version? Because the Yoksha is real time, but like with Praxis, do I do a workout and then get like a readout an hour later? Or like how exactly does that bit work?
Yeah, so it takes about a minute or under a minute for the camera to load and seek your permissions. Once the camera is loaded, the feedback is almost instant. Now, I must add here that in the current Praxis version that's available to you, these are just posture overlays, because we started getting some pushback also from the industry where the teachers didn't want to be undermined. So currently our customers, our SaaS, our product is being sold as SaaS tools for gyms, teachers, trainers. And if we start giving feedback as well, it sort of undermines trainers themselves. So it's sort of killing their business. So our role goes so much as to give you personalized attention, by which we mean giving you awareness of where your limbs are. And this sort of just gels in well with yoga as well, where it encourages you to be more and more aware of your body, of your mind state. The feedback, the correction, the alignment correction bit is still left to the trainer, because the person, the influencer, the YouTuber, the yoga teacher, the weight trainer is still building their YouTube following. So any of the clicks that happen on Praxis or any of the views that happen on Praxis don't go to us. They actually go to the trainer's YouTube channel, and you still are able to build your following. You still are able to build your views. In fact, most of the trainers now who are launching their new channels are choosing to do with us to sort of make their passive content engaging. One of the gyms that we're piloting with, they have now a bucket load of digital content through this last 1 year that they know nothing. They don't know what to do about it, how to make it more user friendly. And this technology really appeals to them.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, I was just doing a class with my gym, like a virtual class, and I had never done a virtual yoga class with them. And I thought, you know, I would love a little bit more personal attention, like feedback to see, mm-hmm. just to see if I was getting, you know, getting the motions right and the stretches right, things like that. So, yeah, have you had much success? It sounds like marketing to, you said, gyms and more B2B stuff. Like, what does that side of it look like?
That's right. So early traction has come through from gyms, gym software. So there's MEMBR, which runs some of the top gyms in the UK. Their software, we're partnering with them. There's Yoga Alliance, which is the body of professionals for yoga teachers in the UK. We're in conversations with them. We're talking to a lot of teacher training studios. So the Yoksha player that we mentioned, that has custom UIs and dedicated interfaces, which are really important for when you're training the teacher, especially in a virtual format. So there's a big franchisee of yoga studios who are setting their new infrastructure in Rishikesh. We're collaborating with them for their virtual training program, because with COVID, even their plans have gotten overturned. So we sort of find good partners and people who have just been completely taken by surprise with this last year. So it feels good to be even able to help them.
Yeah, yeah, that's really, yeah. So along those lines, I mean, customer stories. Do you have any customer stories you can share about people who have benefited from Praxis or Yoksha, or maybe even yoga teachers who've embraced it, things like that?
Absolutely. This is one side of founding Breathe Happy that is closest to my heart, Paul. As you can imagine, being a founder yourself, it's a ridiculously tough journey, and you do it for almost nothing, not just in terms of financial but emotional gains. There's very little time left for your family, for your personal pursuits, for hobbies. I mean, what were they anyway? So one wonders sometimes under the night sky and bonfire, is it all worth it? And then it is the customer feedback that makes it worth it, right? So yes, when I've dropped into some of the classes, I just get floored by the things that people have to say. It just feels unbelievable that our products, our technologies are able to touch people in the way they do. And one of my mentors told me this, that savor this, treasure this, because not many founders, even successful ones, are able to get their products validated and fed back like this. So there are people who share their stories of pregnancies, the stories of people who found walking again after battling arthritis for months. A customer told us we were the light of their lives when she was furloughed and she couldn't sleep for 3 months flat. There was a lady who, in the course of our program, was diagnosed with lung cancer, and we reached out to her in the ways that we could help, or if just logistically speaking, she needed to pause her program or whatever. She was like, no, hell no. This is one thing that keeps me anchored. And that just like was such a huge source of inspiration for all of us. So yeah, we get testimonials by dozens on Instagram, on Twitter, mails. And this is, I've got a nice little folder for myself, which I go back and look at whenever I'm down in the dumps, and it's a source of big inspiration for me.
That's a really healthy practice. I started my career as a teacher, so like those moments when you realize you reach someone and that you're, you know, like they're priceless. You know, no amount of recurring revenue or you know subscriptions can compare to those kind of results. So that's amazing to hear. We've not heard on this podcast like such impactful customer stories as the ones you just shared. So thank you for that. That's really, really powerful. Well, now taking us to another level, like, you know, data, like this is what, you know, I'm sure investors want to hear those customer stories, but they also want to hear data. You've got some great, you know, metrics on your site about, you know, better sleep and improved mobility, but would love to just hear how your company's thinking about data and kind of the nerdy, less personalized side of the customer stories, I guess.
Yes. So when three engineers come and form a company, I think data sort of becomes a very integral part of this. So we were fortunate to win a project by Innovate UK, in which we collaborated with UK's National Innovation Centre of Aging, UK NICA. It's headed by a wonderful, wonderful man called Professor Nick Palmerini, who's headed IBM Watson AI Labs earlier on. He's one of the folks that BGV introduced us. So there you go, the power of network and help from BGV. So yeah, we backed this project with Innovate UK, in which we employed some really novel techniques of researching the impact of our technology on people's lives. So there were traditional techniques that were employed in terms of plain questionnaires, pre-post practice sessions, but there were also facial AI recognition techniques that were employed to assess emotional impact, not just physical impact, pre-post our studies, and not just claimed questionnaires. It was a 9-month long project, but the results were deeply encouraging, so much so that they're now talking about making this a case study there, where 95% people reported improvements in physical health, 84% people reported in mental health. Physical results were driven by joints, mobility, and balance, and mental health improvements were driven by sleep, anxiety improvements. So I'm very touched by the impact that we created.
Yeah, well, now let's pivot into kind of like our lightning round questions. Like we like to ask more generalized things about Tech for Good and just kind of the space to get your impression. But first is a very specific question about you and sort of your founder journey. So just curious about what your tech stack is, particularly as an engineer and a cohort of engineers running the company, and you know, what products you've seen as game-changing for your own practice.
Very simple. We started with no-code tools, but now we eventually have morphed into our video player is built on top of Twilio. We use Angular and convolutional neural nets for our ML modeling. In terms of what products I love, I love Slack and WhatsApp and Post-its. So I love collaborating, and I love just pinning down thoughts. Yes, Miro has been a good blessing. It's been a game changer in the way we now network, collaborate. You can do everything there. So yeah, Miro's been great.
Yep. I was just pouring through some Miro boards today and kind of, yeah, so I'm getting more and more familiar with Miro.
Yeah, you don't need PowerPoints, you don't need Post-its, you don't need Word. It sort of just brings everything together in a collaborative way. So that's pretty great.
Yeah, it is nice. And it's cool to hear like which products people have like invested in or which they haven't or which they're learning about. One that keeps coming up obviously is Notion. Like that's one that, you know, just, yeah, everyone's, I feel like, either like dipping their toe into it or they're all into it. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So we get nothing from Notion on this podcast, by the way. So just throw that out there. Maybe one day. But yeah, I mean, along those lines, like this is like a cheeky question I like to ask everyone, but what's one problem that you think tech can't solve for us, as the name of this podcast implies?
Did you say tech cannot solve for us?
Yeah, what's one problem that tech can't solve for us? Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Oh, nothing. Cool. I believe it's a definition of, maybe in broader sense, what you call technology, because books are a technology. Books have let information time travel. Books have let information gone through printing press was technology, right? Pen is a technology. As long as we keep that definition of technology and not just limited to codes or models, I think there's nothing that we can't solve. I mean, let's not forget 200 years ago, lifespan was 40 years and we're touching 70 now. That's tech. Today, the technology that we carry in the back pockets of our jeans is more powerful than the technology that carried man to moon. So everything's technology and it's going to help us for sure.
Yeah, love that answer. It's funny because you're the first person to basically suggest that there's nothing it can't solve for us. Everyone else has come up with something and they usually key in on, like, you know, sort of things like greed or like, you know, just things like that. And it's fascinating just to see how different people interpret the question and react to it, which is why we ask it. So yeah, thank you for your answer. Well, along those lines, there's tech for good. There's also tech for bad. So what is the evilest application of tech that you've seen out there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you said application, because tech itself is not good or bad. It's the humans, right? So it's the humans that are. I believe, actually, the evilest applications have been in pharma industry. So the guy who sold his drug for some tens of thousands of dollars, I forget his name, as everybody should. I'm deliberately not trying to Google it and put it on the map again. He got served because he got arrested for something completely bizarre and unrelated. So karma comes around. Karma is a bitch. But yeah, that to me is very evil. Even now, companies like... again, I don't want to put them on the map, but they're charging $780,000 per year for a dose of this genetically engineered Spox that can bring eyesight back. It's a gene that corrects the vision. $780,000 for one dose, which then is a maintenance cost of $375,000 per annum. It's a circus. It's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, again, it sort of takes me back to, you mentioned US, right? Healthcare is 1/6 of US GDP. There will come a time, if the things deteriorate the way they are, it'll become the whole of GDP and it's not going to serve anybody any good. It just infuriates me beyond a point, as you can see.
No, I love it. And pharma is such an interesting answer too, because I feel like pharma is kind of being seen in a more positive light these days, obviously, with the vaccines and, you know, just some monoclonal antibodies to fight COVID and things like that. And I think it feels like people are warming to pharma, you know, whereas in the, like everyone's like team Pfizer. And it's just like, if you think like over a year ago, that would be madness in a way to think about that, you know? So yeah, appreciate that answer. Well, I mean, so other than Breathe Happy, if you could breathe up another tech product that would, you know, change the world, what would it be and what problem would it solve and why that problem specifically?
Great question, because if I had the answer to that, I would and should be doing that. But I do feel like genomics is the next frontier. We're somewhat having a passage. I'm a great fan of at-home concept, which is why Breathe Happy, right? So work from home, fitness from home, workout from home. Even in my investor pitches, I say as more and more people work from home, more people will work out from home. So for me, that's sort of like given, where like work is a blend and not like one white, one gray. But where I was going with that was... in genomics, there was this project called Folding at Home that came about 30 years ago, which basically allowed people to fold proteins at home. So it taps into the power of distributed computing. You know, you may have heard of SETI, how they use connected computers across the world to find aliens, right? Now, similar power of distributed computing. In a parallel way, but not in a sequential way. How do we bring that about for genomics and gene sequencing and solving some healthcare issues there? Yeah. So step one is Breathe Happy. Maybe that's step two.
Yeah. Well, you sort of answered my next question, but sort of would be curious about your big prediction for the tech for good space. So is it around genomics? Like what specifically do you see coming around the corner? And I feel like engineers, y'all are particularly good. Like you can see things in like steps and you can kind of like see things building maybe better than the rest of us. But what do you see coming down the pike in terms of tech for good?
That will be fairly cheeky for me to take a shorter answer at. But I'm very interested in healthcare. And so I know just a little about that space. So for sure, you know, genomics the scene in genomics follows a Carlson curve, where the cost of gene sequencing has come down significantly and is following Moore's law. So I believe there's some sort of hidden revolution just around the corner there. Education is a great space that's sort of, I think we're in the midst of that revolution, maybe. High time. Again, sorry to take you back there, but US is one of the countries that's deeply affected by the rising cost of education, bizarrely, ridiculously. So yeah, that's probably another area. More than what's around the corner, I think I'm answering what should be around the corner, right? Those two areas are definitely big ones for me in the should area. I think where we are in the middle of, and I don't know whether it's tech for good or not, but is the retail. Yeah, so groceries at home is the logistics, which it should be, the whole shipping cycle, supply chain. Yeah.
I mean, truly, like, God bless the Deliveroo drivers and like they, I mean, they're the true heroes of, I think, the past. I mean, along with the NHS, absolutely, obviously. But yeah, I'm so grateful to those guys and gals and humans for bringing delicious food to my door and also like facilitating my lifestyle as like a founder and someone who can, like, you know, and it pains me to hear that they're not being compensated well enough, that they don't have, you know, like these benefits and things like that. And even in a country like the UK, it's just like, how do we move beyond that and make sure that people are well cared for in any role, you know? So that's, and along the genomics side too, I think I saw something the other day about like schools thinking about like running the gene sequence of like all students or something like that. And related to COVID, I think, like, I was just, and the privacy and sort of, you know, personal health implications of that, I was sort of like, you know, you can feel the future like coming on, and I almost feel old because I'm like, ooh, like, is that, do we want to do that? But I understand the public health implications. So
yeah, that's a completely different podcast.
Okay. Yeah. we'll save it for... Well, sort of rounding out the conversation, we touched on this a little bit earlier. You were talking about hobbies going out the door, and hopefully your yoga practice hasn't gone out the door with the founding your company. But one thing that we keep coming up on in Tech for Good is balancing this life, you know, between profit and purpose, and, you know, building a fruitful life, you know, in a career that you love. So I guess rather than giving advice, one thing we're trying to do here is ask people what's worked for them, you know, and other mm-hmm. people can take it or leave it. So what's worked for you in terms of building, you know, a life that balances the two to the extent they can be balanced?
So profit, purpose, definitely. That balance should, would, will be there for Breathe Happy. That's sort of the core philosophy of company. Balance between work and life. I don't think these are two different words, and more so. The very fact that I'm such a big fan of at-home concept in every walk of life is because of that. If you're trying to have work and life different, perhaps you've got it wrong. So perhaps, and with all humility and humbleness, I admit, and I'm lucky enough to afford these choices. So let me preface it that way, that I am fortunate to be in a position with two limbs, two arms, two legs in a society that is not war torn, in a society that is equal, just gives me enough choices to exercise. And in that society, probably it'll be wiser for all of us to move towards a place where we can exercise the work that also is our life. So I don't know. It's a probably meta answer to what you asked, but I'm sort of obsessive about whatever it is that I'm chasing at that point in time. And if that happens to be work, so be it. If that happens to be life, so be it.
And am I to understand, like, how did the pandemic and the lockdown affect you? Did you feel like you went deeper into the everything at home, or were you already there, or are you not itching to get out there and like go to the gym or, you know, meet people at the pub? Like how is your orientation there? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to sound totally antisocial, but no, I'm not itching to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. Right. So My internal locus of control is extremely high, at the cost of sounding immodest. But yeah, I mean, of course, lockdown had certain behavior changes. So instead of the walk on treadmill, I would go walk in the nature. And if anything, I'm loving that more. So behavior changes for sure, yes. But is there anything that I'm itching to go do? Perhaps holidays. But in terms of day-to-day life, very little. Meeting people is one, of course. You know, family, loved ones. Most of my family is in India and the flights are not allowed in. So I'm really looking forward to meet them once the flights are back allowed in. But in terms of daily behaviors, which is perhaps where the essence of your question is, it's not like being at home restricts me from that human connection. Tools have helped. Technology has helped, of course. So Zoom, Meet, phones, WhatsApp, Slack. They've completely helped there. And one will not hurt with maybe once in a month meeting, but too muchness is also much. So
yeah, of course. I mean, someone mentioned too, like I've heard it said, like, you know, imagine if the lockdowns happened like 10 years ago before we had, mm-hmm. you know, these more advanced tools to sort of collaborate and stay connected. That would have been a very, very different experience, maybe harder on a lot of people. And then I think for me personally, and maybe everyone to some extent, like, really learn the limits of my introversion and my own internal locus of control, like through lockdowns. And I think in some ways developed really healthy, you know, great habits, like started cooking more, more walks in nature, all that stuff. But in other cases, I think I was like, oh, actually I do want and need some human connection here. And, you know, some energy that I get from that. I think of myself as kind of an ambivert. Like I get it energy both ways, probably slightly more introverted, but yeah, really appreciate that that perspective there. And it sounds like you're building a company that is truly balancing both and you know, regardless of the implications for your own schedule. So happy to profile you here. Well, tell our listeners, like, where can they find out about you and Breathe Happy? And yeah, where can they find you on the interwebs?
So letsbreathehappy.com. So it's LETS Breathe happy.com. That's where you can find about us, our journey, our story, our products, Yorkshire Praxis, and yes, hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, if you have any feedback, any questions,
and any big big goals or requests that, you know, our listeners can maybe help you with other than signing up? Like, what are you working on in the next few months here?
Well, give us a follow on Twitter or on Instagram, but check out our Praxis. That's something that we're truly excited with. So like I said, once you go on letsbreathehappy.com, you click on try now for Praxis. So practice it with YouTube. It's completely free at the moment. Yes, it's unbelievably free at the moment. You just go on YouTube, just practice with any video and see your posture and tell us what you feel.
That's great. And we'll include some links to all this stuff in the episode description, of course. But Shithi, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And super excited to hear about Breathe Happy and everything you're building. And yeah, just grateful for your time here.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure, Paul, to be talking to you and to be doing our bit or for making worthy conversations happen in Tech for Good space. And more power to you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.